Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. Have you ever heard of Larry Norman? The guy that Billboard magazine said was the most important songwriter since Paul Simon? Norman's music went on to inspire members of bands that I'm sure you've heard of. Bands like U2, The Pixies, and Guns N' Roses. I must confess that I hadn't heard of Larry Norman until I discovered Gregory Thornberry's new book, Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? In 1969, Norman went into Capitol Records Hollywood studio and laid down tracks for an album that would launch a new music genre, Christian rock. Gregory Thornberry tells us why Larry Norman still matters.
Larry Norman matters now for a whole range of reasons, most of which are ancillary to the music, as good as that is. But he was a, sort of a pioneering cultural figure at a time in which there was really no space to stand in the place that he wanted to stand. He was torn between two worlds. He was torn between Christ and the devil. And he was in the secular music industry, recording records on Capitol Records and MGM Verve Records, and touring around the world to sold-out audiences. And his peers in the secular music industry respected him, like people like Bob Dylan and Paul McCartney. He was in the late 60s when he was with his band People, that he was the principal songwriter for and the lead singer for. He was opening up on bills with Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin and The Doors. So he had that, but they didn't understand why he would ever want to talk about God. And on the other hand, pastors and church leaders, the vast majority of them thought rock and roll is of the devil. This is satanic music. This is the Trojan horse being brought into the church to destroy everything and take us down the primrose path to the sexual revolution and all the rest. And they thought of him as a heretic. And so he is somebody that was willing to be what I call in the book a holy fool. And a holy fool is someone who's willing to speak up on something in the public square and say something that nobody wants to hear, but eventually people wind up saying, maybe you have a point here.
Can you take me back to the first time you heard Larry Norman's music?
Yeah. The job that I got was in college, as a manager of a small FM radio station that played Christian contemporary music. And I absolutely hated everything that I heard on that station. It made my skin crawl. And it seemed like Christians were accepting the sounds kind of like as an alternative, and I just hated it. But there was a semi-professional DJ at the station that was older, and he said, there's one artist that I think you might actually like. And he pulled out a couple of records, and here I saw this, you know, odd-looking, long blonde hair guy in denim standing in Times Square with his hand on his head looking puzzled, and the album was Only Visiting This Planet. And I went to the control booth, and I lowered down the needle onto the record, and it blew me away. It was every bit as good as anything that I had listened to. The production values were great. I looked at the musicians on the record. I mean, these were people that were, you know, working in conjunction with George Martin from the Beatles, and I'm like, wait, who is this guy?
You can be a righteous rocker on a holy roller. You can be most anything. You can be Russell or a super muscle. You can be a corporate king. You can be a wealthy man from Texas or a witch with heavy hexes. But without love, you ain't nothing without love.
That was my introduction to Larry Norman. It set up a time where I got into a car and drove 750 miles to go see him play in concert. And it was the combination both of the quality of the songwriting, but then also seeing him in concert where he had this sort of mesmerizing effect on the crowd. And I later, this actually didn't make the cut in the book, but Larry called it the green hand. He could stand in front of thousands of people and you could hear a pin drop. And it was a very unique quality in an artist.
What else about seeing him live? And just in general, he was known for talking a lot during his concerts and doing these kind of often funny riffs and sermonizing. Yeah. And what kinds of things would he say?
Well, I mean, it was sort of psychoanalysis. on the cheap.
I saw one movie, it was like, you know, a superstar cast. All the good actors read it. You know, I doubt they read the Bible, but they all had their scripts memorized. Hmm. Have you read the Bible? No, but I've seen the movie.
He would start talking directly to the audience, and he would talk about what's going on in your own inner head space and soul space, and he would sort of challenge you. And it was usually about getting inside of why you feel so alienated from yourself and from God and from other people around you. And it wound up having this unique combination of being sort of both a lecture and sort of a concert. He would talk about sex. He would talk about institutional racism in the church. He would go through all the taboos of things that you're not supposed to talk about.
As you say, Norman was too edgy for the Jesus people, and he was too religious for the run-of-the-mill rock fans. He was yeah. Someone who wasn't afraid to challenge organized religion and call them out on their hypocrisies. Can you give me a couple of examples?
Well, that was, I think, his signature achievement in his career, was that he was he was like a John the Baptist figure, and he was challenging the church that felt like they were living in their halcyon days when he was growing up in the 1950s. That was the time they felt like everything was okay, and he's like, wait a minute, you are participating, many of your own church members in the South are participating in the KKK. And you are so out of touch with what is happening politically and socially in the society that you stand absolutely no chance of having any sort of voice in this generation. He talked about what it felt like to be a young person coming of age and being a Christian and nervous about sex and what is that about. And so he felt like the church was spending 90% of its time talking about things that someone who is not a person of faith would never even care about.
Yeah.
So he decided to talk about things that they did care about.
He released his fourth album in 1972. This one is called Only Visiting This Planet. That was your initial entry point into Larry Norman's music. You say that this album is a masterpiece. Why?
It's a masterpiece, I think, you know, in some ways because it's been recognized as such. The National Recording Registry of the Library of Congress added it into the National Archive as a, you know, distinctive signature work of American art, you know, for its contributions historically, culturally, and aesthetically. It's an album that was produced at Air Studios, which was brand new, George Martin's new studio. George Martin was too busy to produce the album himself, but he corresponded with Larry and said, let me put you in touch with this team called Triumvirate, and they produce the record. As a matter of fact, some of the photographs in the studio were taken by Linda McCartney at the time, and he performed with, John Wetton, who was the bass player for, King Crimson. And it was like top studio people. And the writing on it is just spectacular. It runs the gamut between challenging the American church and American culture at large for its easy breezy walk into warmongering with the Vietnam War. It challenges institutional racism on a song like The Great American Novel, where there's this line, you kill a black man at midnight.
Just for talking to your daughter. Then you make his wife your mistress, and you leave her without water. And the sheet you wear up on your face is the sheet your children sleep on. And at every meal you say a prayer you don't believe, but still you keep on.
And those sorts of lines, coupled with, you know, all-out rockers like, why don't you look into Jesus, you know, that song is kind of offensive to somebody who's not a person of faith. And then it moves into commentary on American culture, the buffoonery of American politics, And then there's this gorgeous song called Pardon Me with these beautiful string arrangements that are about sort of the conflicted feelings a young person of faith might have about their first, you know, sexual encounters and is it okay to abstain?
Pardon me, kissing you like I'm afraid, but I know I'm being played with, and you'll leave me when you get the chance.
It goes a lot of different directions that rock wasn't willing to go at the time. Sensitive direction. It was also going somewhere that the church was not willing to go. So it's a masterpiece for all those reasons.
How did the fundamentalist right wing of the American church respond to this album?
Well, they hated him. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the people that really hated him were not the Billy Grahams of the world. They liked Larry Norman, but it was the television preachers, and they were just first starting out in the 70s, that said that he is like a version of the devil. He is destroying the mind of our youth.
How did Larry Norman respond to these attacks?
Larry would just make fun of these guys in concert, from everything for their comments about the length of his hair to that the flatted third in the pentatonic blues scale is the devil's interval. And he's like, oh, really? That's where the devil's eyes? And, you know, that's where communism comes out. Okay, I got it. You know, so, I mean, he was very satirical about it. And, you know, humor is the best way to defuse an enemy.
He also had this theory that you write about in your book that I found very interesting, his theory about true artists never being commercial. It's only the imitators who follow popularize, you know, and they popularize their concepts for the masses. They're the ones that do well commercially.
Yeah. No, he really felt like the job of the artist is to explore new territory and to get as close as you can to poetry. But he definitely felt like there should be this artistic impulse and you shouldn't worry about being commercial, that if you're, especially if you are following God, he will take care of you.
In 1973, Larry Norman released an album called So Long Ago, The Garden. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the album cover on which he appears naked.
Yes.
And, yeah. And this was his follow-up album to Only Visiting This Planet.
That's right.
It was the second album of a proposed trilogy. How does So Long Ago, The Garden compare to the previous album? It's quite different, isn't it?
It's very different, and it's my favorite record that Larry Norman ever did. It is, it's the production is first rate. Triumvirate was back on board as the production team. The song writing on it is very clever and very twisty. And it gets under your skin, and it ends in this nightmare vampy song called Nightmare Number 71, in which California, there's an earthquake and California breaks away from the rest of the country and the rest of the country sinks and Hollywood wins. And it's just really trippy.
The California earthquake, it tore the land in half. While San Andreas cleared her throat, I heard tsunami laugh. The ground began to tremble, the land began to sway, and people in the other states, they were glad they moved away. But suddenly, California just floated in a breeze, while everything that wasn't sank down into the sea.
Part of the reason why that record is like it is because Billy Graham said, you know what, you should not talk about Jesus so much. He said, try to write the best artistic statement you can and see if you can get an audience that way.
Yeah.
And then they'll follow what you believe later on. And he did it.
There are a lot of surreal lyrics and things going on too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a song called Be Careful What You Sign.
Yeah, that's a very dark song. Tell me about that one.
It's a Faustian tale. It's someone who encounters the devil. You know, he takes out a gun and he commits a murder. And at the end, he winds up killing himself. But I've seen all the letters where Larry tries to unpack what all of this surrealistic and metaphorical imagery is about. And it's like, here's what happens when you go down the road of trying to you know, kill someone that might be able to help you, which would be Jesus, mm-hmm. and you throw in your hat to someone who can, you know, give you the whole world, but you lose your soul. It's a song that just really kind of bothers you. It's disturbing.
I'm curious, though, since this song, he followed Billy Graham's, this album, I should say, he followed Billy Graham's advice, and the album was, for all intents and purposes, didn't have this strong religious message. I'm curious about how fans, his fans reacted. Did they feel kind of shafted that he'd sold out?
Yeah, they were thrown overboard because they said he's gone secular.
Yeah.
Larry told them that he was going to do this, and he said, I don't want it to be said that I made money off of Jesus. So I'm not going to do concerts like this anymore. So he releases So Long Ago, The Garden, and I mean, it's just like the knives came out, and all the periodicals that were promoting him before said, you know, we heard that you're not a Christian anymore. And is, you know, are the rumors true? He was trying to reposition himself as a true artist, and his publicist got it, and to some extent the record company got it, but the fans didn't get it. And so it was a bad career move, even though it was artistically the best move.
One of the most intriguing things about Norman's career trajectory is that as he became more popular, the more his music started being about him instead of about Jesus.
Yeah.
And was that something he was conscious of and something that he was concerned about, that he wrestled with?
What he discovered is if he wrote about what he knew, which was his own struggles, it connected with his audience.
Mm-hmm.
And he would bring Jesus into it, but he used the vehicle of his own pain and suffering. And that's why I think he actually hung around for as long as he did, was because he could draw people into his own narrative, and they felt like he was talking about the same stuff that they were going through.
What is Larry Norman's legacy?
I think that it's a cautionary tale in the fact that I feel like that he took risks, and I feel like we're in a very risk-averse culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's part of his legacy. I mean, obviously, another big part of his legacy is that he really was an artist. He sat by his own fence post and whistled his own tune and made people pay attention to him. And we're still paying attention to him all of these years later.
What do you think Larry Norman would think of today's American evangelicalism?
I think he would be brokenhearted.
Mm-hmm.
There's this Pauline phrase from the New Testament, having the form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And I think he would have, he talked a lot about, you know, why are we spending multi-millions of dollars on these huge church facilities that are, you know, temples to charismatic individuals,
yeah,
more than they are Jesus, when they're people that we know in our own city that are starving. Like, mm-hmm. where are the priorities there? And he would sort of look at the gospel industrial mm-hmm. complex. I think Larry would say these people that are cozying up to power are just lambs being led to slaughter because they're so close to it they can't see how the rest of the culture is looking at them and saying, if that's what it's about, I can't have anything to do with God or anything that Jesus might have said. And it may seem like a good idea at the time, but what are the long-term after effects of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he would be hot and bothered if he were around today.
Mama killed a chicken, she thought it was a duck. She put it on the table with his legs sticking up. Papa broke his glasses when he fell down drunk. Tried to drown the kitty cat, turned out to be a skunk. You gotta watch what you're doing.
Gregory Thornberry is the author of Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? Larry Norman and the Perils of Christian Rock. For more information about Gregory and Norman, please visit wpr.org/beta. And we'd love to hear what you think of Beta. You can get in touch with us by sending an email to beta@wpr.org.